For value and transportation, call King Cab at 451-TAXI. That's 451-8294. Remember, let's keep our mining industry strong. And when you need a lift around town, call Golden Nugget Taxi at 451-8294. Remember, King Cab believes a working community is a healthy community. Let's work together to keep our mining industry strong. A message from King Cab, which offers reasonable rates and courteous, friendly service. When you need transportation, call King Cab, 451-8294. That's 451-TAXI. And by the way, tell them you heard of their support for the industry from Jim on Alaska Gold Trails, coming up next, right after Johnny Holiday Sports.
Hello, everybody. For Johnny Holiday, this is Andrea Kirby reporting on sports. At this hour, the United States Olympic Committee is holding a news conference to announce the host city for the 1996 Summer Games. The U.S. bids to host the Games are Atlanta and Minneapolis-St. Paul. The NBA playoffs get underway for 8 more teams tonight. The Boston Celtics take on the Knicks at the Boston Garden. Knicks center Patrick Ewing says Boston will probably look to double-team the Knicks down low.
They're going to try to stop our post people. You know, and we've been doing an excellent job this year of when they double and triple team is finding the open people. And as long as we continue to do that, then I think, you know, they're going to have a tough time double and triple teaming us.
The defending champion Lakers figure to have an easy time with the San Antonio Spurs, who finished with a dismal 31-51 record and gave up an average 136 points in 5 losses to the Lakers. At the Omni in Atlanta, the Hawks host the Milwaukee Bucks, both of those teams struggling at the end of the regular season. And the high-scoring Denver Nuggets play host to the Seattle Supersonics, who lost 4 of 5 regular season matchups to Denver. Playoffs in the Patrick Division of the National Hockey League go to Game 7 after the Washington Capitals. Even the series against New Jersey with a 7-2 win at the Meadowlands last night. Devils defenseman Bruce Driver says the pressure is on both teams.
There's pressure on both teams, and both teams are going to be playing desperate hockey, and I don't think either team has the advantage with the game being in there. We've won in there, and they've won in their own building and played well in their own building, so I don't foresee either team having an advantage in the final game.
The nation is pulling for the Orioles to break their losing streak, all except Chicago. As attention continues, Chicago outfielder Kenny Williams hopes the attention doesn't turn to the White Sox.
We sure don't want them to come in here and get their first victory. You think we got reporters here now? I hear they're coming in from everywhere, just waiting for the Orioles to win, and we don't want them to be here in Chicago.
American League President Bobby Brown is conducting a hearing today about Texas Rangers pitcher Mitch William, who was suspended for 2 games last Monday night for fighting in an April game against the Red Sox. Edmonton Oilers forward Marty McSorley was suspended for 3 games today for spearing the Flames' leading scorer, Mike Bullard, in a playoff game last Saturday. And coming up the next hour, the announcement of the city to be named host to the 1996 Olympic Games. For Johnny Holiday and the ABC Information Network, I'm Andrea Kirby.
Good afternoon, folks, and welcome to Alaska Gold Trails. I'm your host, Jim Adonna, from the University of Alaska Fairbanks Mining Extension. This is your radio show on mining in Alaska, past, present, and future. More specifically, folks, gold mining in Alaska's misty past, controversial present, and mysterious future. I'll be with you right here on KFAR 660 on your radio dial each Friday from 1 to 3 p.m., where we can discuss the entire spectrum of mining in Alaska, from the fascinating and colorful history of the major and minor gold rushes to the most recent gold prospecting and mining techniques. But most of all, my friends, give us a call if you have a question or care to make a comment on mining in Alaska. Or maybe you just want to chat for a few minutes or want to share one of your favorite frontier experiences. The number here is 479-TALK. That's 479-8255. Let's talk gold mining through the years along Alaska Gold Trails. Where do miners sell their gold? Everyone knows they sell it to the precious metals people, Oxford Assaying and Refining, located at 208 Wendell Street. In addition, Oxford also has some fascinating precious metal gift and investment ideas. These include sending gifts of silver. Listen to this, folks. The silver Alaskan coin and the Oxford Alaska bar. These 1 ounce pure silver pieces are a unique way to share Alaska with friends and family for under $10 each. And here's a super idea. 1 ounce pure silver rounds priced at 95 cents over the daily quote. The 1987 American Gold Eagles are now available with four sizes to choose from, starting at $65 for the 1/10 ounce coin. Add a 14-karat gold bezel with a chain, and you have that perfect gift for that someone special. Gold coins and ingots from around the world, available in all sizes, starting at $25 a piece. And don't forget, genuine Alaskan gold nuggets are truly the Alaskan gift. So stop by and view their fine selection, starting at just $28.50 a penny weight. Give gifts of lasting value that will long be remembered. Give gold and silver, now available from your precious metal people, Oxford Assaying and Refining, 208 Wendell Street. Give them a call at 456-3967. And don't forget their special precious metals quote line, 452-7858, for daily prices on gold, silver, and platinum. The quote line, once again, is 452-7858. We've got a fascinating program planned for you today, folks. In just a few minutes, we're going to meet today's guest, Dr. Donald Cook, Dean of the School of Mineral Engineering from the University of Alaska. But before we launch into the thick of the program, let's do what we do to give away dinner for two at Laura's Gold Strike Cafe. And you know what that is. That's our Frontier Quiz. And now, folks, if you're ready, we have a question for you. Of course, we have a special phone number here, and we want to know who the business is at the other end of that phone number, where that business is located, and three major services that business offers. And of course, we'd like to know a little bit about that business. So the number is 456-4141. When you have the information regarding who they are, where they are, their three major services, and a little more, then give us a call at 479-TALK. That's 479-8255, and give us your answer. So while that is, while we're waiting for your calls on the quiz, we'd like to talk a little bit about our friends Robert, Charlene, and James Johnston, who own and operate a family business here in Fairbanks called Arctic Springs at 285 Alta Way. They started manufacturing leaf springs and U-bolts for all sizes and types of vehicles and heavy equipment several years ago. Because of their interest in developing a leaf spring manufacturing plant in Fairbanks, they became one of the first businesses to be awarded the use of the Made in Alaska logo for businesses using Alaskan products and labor. And by the way, folks, I was over at Alaskan Springs just the other day, and you know, those folks over there manufacture springs for race cars used in outside races. I think that's remarkable. That combined with their use of the Made in Alaska logo and the exporting of springs to the outside is quite impressive, I think. To give you an example of what they can do over there on their Alta Way plant in their 6,000 square foot manufacturing building, listen to this. They manufacture and recondition springs for snow machines, cars, trucks, heavy equipment, and get this, folks, even aircraft. Springs can be re-arched and U-bolts cold bent to your specifications, and they can raise and lower your vehicle. Arctic Springs handles both standard and custom-made coil springs. In addition, look at some of the other items they stock. A complete line of steel, brass, rubber, and Teflon bushings. Torsion bar axles for auto trailers, snow machine trailers, and weasels. Finally, folks, they build trailers to your specifications, so bring in your blueprints or sketch. In addition, they have two huge 30-inch by 8-foot heat treatment ovens, which can accommodate just about any material that needs heat treating. And by the way, you placer miners who have a large batch of placer gold, you might want to think about those ovens over there because they can be heated up to 2,000 degrees Fahrenheit. And that, of course, is adequate to melt gold down to doré. And so if you have an idea that you would like to turn your placer fines into a bar, just take it over to Bob right there at Arctic Springs at 285 Alta Way, or give them a call at 451-8612. That's 451-8612, and our lines are lit up, so let's see what the folks have to say. Hi there, welcome to Alaska Gold Trails. You're on the air.
Yes, your mystery number is Larson's Jewelry at 401 Noble Street. They sell beautiful jewelry, and they do appraisals, and they also make jewelry.
Is that right? Have you been into Larson's?
Quite a few times.
Have you? Let me just remind the other callers that they shouldn't hang up just because we have a right answer, because we'll listen to what they have to say, and perhaps they can win a prize, too. Now, can you tell me a little bit more about Larson's? Do they have trophies over there?
Yes, they have trophies, and they do engraving, I do believe.
Uh-huh.
And they have beautiful diamonds.
Oh, they do, huh? Do they have a new stock in?
I don't know. I haven't been down there in the last month.
Uh-huh. What about our safety? Do they have anything to do with safety?
Oh, locks and keys. They do locks and keys and safe. They can open them if you forgot the combination. And what else do they do? They're locksmiths, anyway.
I see. Well, you know what you've done. What have you done? You've won dinner for two at Laura's Gold Strike Cafe, haven't you?
Well, that's real nice.
But
I didn't know that I would win anything, but their telephone number and my home telephone number are all the same numbers except in different sequence, and I get an awful lot of calls for Larson's Jewelry.
Oh, I see. What is your name?
Nita.
Nita.
N-I-T-A.
N-I-T-A, and your last name, Nita?
Ledingham, L-E-D-I-N-G-H-A-M.
Okay, Nita, all you have to do is stop up here at the KFAR studio,
mm-hmm.
pick up your certificate for dinner for two at Laura's Gold Strike Cafe.
Thank you very much.
And thanks so much for the call.
Mm-hmm.
Bye-bye.
Now.
Bye-bye. And folks, we'd like to thank our friends over at Laura's Gold Strike Cafe for providing the weekly prizes of Dinner for Two on Alaska Gold Trails. And by the way, y'all know where Laura's is. That's right across the street from the Daily News Miner. So stop in over there and tell them hello from Alaska Gold Trails. Well, thanks once again, Nita, for giving us a call. We'd like to take a moment right now to give you a brief introduction to the calendar of events. We have one item here that we want to discuss, and that, of course, is the gold prospecting class that will be coming up May 13th. This will be provided, of course, by the University of Alaska Mining Extension, and it's a three-day class, Friday night, Saturday night, and all-day Sunday field trip. So if you're interested in learning the basics of gold prospecting all the way up and to the how the large-scale mining operations work, then this is just the class for you. We'll learn everything from gold panning to how a D9 cat pushes gravel into a sluice box. So if you're interested in that, give us a phone call at 474-7702, or you can call me at my phone at 456-2569. We'll be glad to give you more information. It's going to be a fun class, a family-type program. You'll be sure to enjoy it if you take it, so give us a call, and let's see you there. And now I want to introduce today's guest, Dr. Donald Cook from the School of Mineral Engineering, the University of Alaska. Don Cook, welcome to Alaska Gold Trails.
Thank you, Jim. It's a pleasure to be here with you today.
Say, Don, let's get a little background on you right quick here. Tell us, where do you hail from?
Oh, I hail from Astoria, Oregon originally, but I came to Alaska in 1939 to attend the University of Alaska and study mining engineering.
Well, Don, did they have airplanes flying up?
No, in those days there were no airplanes. The only way to get up here was to go by boat, the Alaska Steamship boat, and I took the boat out of Seattle. It was a seven-day trip to Seward, and then 2 days over the Alaska Railroad to get into the College Station at that time.
Is that right? Now, what time of the year did you arrive?
Oh, I arrived in September. Unfortunately, we had a very rough trip over the Gulf at that time, and I wasn't feeling too good when I arrived. When I arrived at what was the College Station at the foot of the hill, it was raining cats and dogs, and it was ankle deep in mud, and we have to walk up the hill to get to the dormitory area.
I've had a couple of guests on that said that they came up steerage. Did you come up steerage?
No, I didn't come up steerage. I came, I had a, in a stateroom with three other people, and they happened to be all students that were coming up because the time was ripe. The students were coming to meet what was called at that time the student special out of Seward, which was scheduled to arrive at the university in time for the fall semester. But we had quite a few students that did come up steerage, but the stateroom that I was in was below waterline, so might as well have been steerage.
I see. So you took the railroad up from Seward to Fairbanks. Was there, is the railroad basically the same then?
The railroad is basically the same, but the time period was different. It it was an overnight stop coming over before you got into Fairbanks.
Mm-hmm.
And
where was that at, Don?
I was trying to remember. I think they stopped in at the McKinley Park area,
mm-hmm.
Healy or McKinley Park, and then you got into Fairbanks probably about noon of the second day.
When, now you went to the School of Mines here, is that right?
Yes, I did. That time there were probably about 300 students in the whole university, which was called University of Alaska, not University of Alaska at that time. It was College of Agriculture and School of Mines. And there were about 300 students at that time, and I would imagine, I think there were 85 of them, or roughly 30% of them were studying mining engineering.
Mm-hmm. Did, now, you came 1939, did you finish your Bachelor of Science?
No, I didn't prior to the war. I went into the Army because I was in the ROTC program at the university, and I ended up in Fort Benning, got a commission, and was in the Army for 3 years, and ended up in the invasion of Normandy in World War II.
Mm-hmm. And when did you return? Did you return to Fairbanks then, following the war?
Well, I had to spend a period of about a year and a half in the hospitals, and then I came back to Fairbanks in December 1945, in time for the second semester of spring of 46.
I see. Did then how it would took you what? How long to obtain your bachelor's degree after that?
I obtained bachelor's degree in 47.
In 47. Then you went right forward with your master's degree?
No. After that, I went to work for what was called the FE Company at that time, which was changed later to United States Smelting, Refining, and Mining Company. I spent 3 years there. And then I spent a couple years working as an assayer engineer for the Territorial Department of Mines, which had an office right at the university. And then 2 years at the university as an instructor. And then I went another 3 years back to USSR and M Company as a mining engineer. After that, 3 years in graduate school. Then I came back to the university and have been there ever since.
As a mining engineer, you were an engineer on the dredges, is that right?
No, not on the dredges. I was working out the main office in Fairbanks. But they had seven dredges operating at that time within a 30-mile radius of Fairbanks.
Uh-huh. And tell me, or tell us a little bit about what you did as an engineer.
Well, the first 3 years when I was there as a dredge engineer, primarily concerned with evaluation of ground, evaluation of the ground that had been dredged to see whether the recovery was comparable to the prospect value as far as the drilling program is concerned, outlining each dredge's program for the coming year, also surveying, in charge of the survey crew that had to go out and survey the dredges, the stripping, as well as the thawing programs.
Did you find that the dredges recovered as much gold as the area evaluation indicated was in the ground?
Well, a little spasmodic if you took it in short sections. We had to evaluate it for every cleanup position, and each dredge cleaned up about once every 2 weeks. And if you looked at a short piece of ground, as far as volume was concerned, for a two-week period, probably the recovery over prospect value could fluctuate as much as 50% recovery or as great as 200% recovery. But if you took the entire life of the creek and evaluated all the recoveries on the creek, surprisingly, you got within 95 to 105% of what you thought you should have gotten.
Don, I'd like to perhaps look at the number of dredges that were in the Fairbanks area and where they began and where they ended up just after a few announcements.
Okay.
Robbie at Tip Top Chevrolet is an easygoing guy, but when he saw the all-new 1988 Chevrolet pickups, he really lost control. He couldn't stop himself from stocking up on so many models. He's positive that if you can't find exactly what you want in a truck at Tip Top, it just doesn't exist. Why did a normally sane fellow like Robbie go out so out of control? Well, to understand it, you'll just have to take a look at the all-new 1988 full-size pickups at Tip Top and see for yourself. Maybe it was the all-new, sturdier-than-ever box front frame or the new aerodynamic styling with smooth lines and rounded contours to reduce wind drag. Or perhaps it was the high-tech computer-engineered efficiency for all types of payloads. How about the large, easy-access doors, eight-layer finish, the all-welded box, or the big, comfortable cab? Who wouldn't flip over the new extended cab pickup that seats up to six people? You like four-wheel drive? Robbie's got the 4x4 Chevy with a shift-on-the-fly power to all four wheels instantly. As much as Robbie loves all his new Chevrolet pickups, he just can't use them all himself. So he's doing the only sane thing. He's selling them to anyone who can come up with an offer that can stand up to the light of day. So come in today to Tip Shop Chevrolet and see all the models Robbie has to show you. From the economical Cheyenne to the bold new Scottsdale and the top-of-the-line Silverado. You'll see for yourself what got Robbie so excited when you look at the wide selection of all-new 1988 Chevrolet pickups. Stop by Tip Top Chevrolet today for the best deals and on the best new pickups around. That's Tip Top Chevrolet at 1916 Cushman. Or, by the way, give them a call at 452-8211. Once again, that's Tip Top Chevrolet. And while we're on the subject of autos and trucks, whether it's an auto, a light truck, or a motorhome, or even a big rig, for the best service in town, it's Gabe's Truck and Auto Repair. And that's not just my opinion, folks. As a matter of fact, last year, the Fairbanks Chamber of Commerce gave Gabe's Truck and Auto their prestigious Raven About Fairbanks Award for providing the best vehicle service in Fairbanks. Gabe's has two large shops and eight mechanics on hand to serve you. And you know, with that much attention, you'll get fast, courteous service and have your vehicle back in a big hurry. As a matter of fact, the transmission just fell out of my vehicle. I took it over to Gabe's, and I got just that kind of service and the car back in a hurry. Just in time to make it to the radio station and get this show off the ground at the proper hour. In addition to engine and general vehicle maintenance, Gabe's can also repair automatic transmissions, as I just pointed out, realign front ends, and repair mount and balance tires. New and rebuilt engines come with a 12-month or 12,000-mile warranty. As you can see, Gabe's is a one-stop service center, and if you need an IM inspection, you know, folks, Gabe's has a no-pay, no-pass policy. Excuse me, I think there's no pass, no pay policy. The public will remember that one. That's right. If you don't pass, you don't pay at Gabe's. And, by the way, just for your information, Gabe's has a special going on regarding the IM inspection until the end of the month. It's $25. And in addition to that, if you'll go over to Gabe's and you tell them that you heard of their ad on Alaska Gold Trails, they'll give you a free front-end inspection. So if your front end is feeling a little weak, if steering isn't quite as solid as you like it, take it over to Gabe's. They'll inspect it free for you to determine what the problem might be. And while you're over there, folks, ask them about their new shock special. Buy three and get the fourth one free. A good deal at Gabe's Truck and Auto. And don't forget Gabe's towing service. He has three wreckers available 24 hours a day and can handle any size rig. Getting a tow is as easy as calling 456-6156. You might want to write that number down and put it in your glove box. You can turn your rag into a ride at Gabe's Truck and Auto, located off Van Horn Road near Metro Field, or give them a call, and the number, once again, is 456-6156. That's 456-6156, and tell them you heard of their support for the mining industry from Jim on Alaska Gold Trails. We're here on Alaska Gold Trails, KFAR Radio, 660 on your radio dial. My guest this afternoon is Don Cook, the Dean of the School of Mineral Engineering at the University of Alaska, Fairbanks. And if you have a question of Don regarding mining and mining history, give us a call here. The number is 479-TALK, 479-8255. Don, we were talking about the dredges, and there were a number of dredges working in and around the Fairbanks area. How many exactly worked in this area?
Well, there's a couple of dredges which I call the mystery dredges, Jim. My acquaintance with it starting from 1939, there were 7 dredges working. But if you look at the numbers of the dredge, they go up to 10. Dredge number 1, as far as I'm concerned, I never did see it. It's sort of a mystery thing. There may be somebody in your audience out there that has some knowledge of it, and I would appreciate knowing. Starting with dredge number 2, it started operation on Goldstream Creek, upper end of Goldstream, dredged down to about where Fox Roadhouse is, or a little below that. And then it was moved over to Fairbanks Creek. At the present time, sits down in the lower end of Fairbanks Creek. Dredge number 3 started in Clary Creek, dredged down Clary Creek into the Chattanooga area and the Chattanooga Flats. And dredge number 3 sits out there in the Chattanooga Flats, and you can see it as you, or at least see the stacker on it as you drive by on the way to Circle. Dredge number 4 started dredging up on the upper end of Pedro Creek, dredged out there, and because it was a shallow digging dredge, there was only a certain amount of ground it could work on, and they eventually moved that over to Chicken Creek in the 40 mile area. Dredge number 5 started on Clary Creek, the upper end of Clary Creek, as opposed to the lower end where dredge 3 was working. Dredged down Clary Creek and up dredged up Clary Creek rather, then was moved over into Little El Dorado, over the saddle into Little El Dorado, and then after in the Little El Dorado area, when that was dredged out, moved over to Dome Creek, and it's sitting on Dome Creek at the present time. Dredge number 6 started in the Esther area. When it finished the ground there, it moved over to Gold Hill, dredged that area out, and then was moved over to Sheep Creek. Dredge number 7, I never did see operating. It's a wooden hull dredge that currently sits over in the lower end of Fish Creek. Dredge number 8, the one that everybody's familiar with as far as a tourist attraction on Engineer Creek, dredged up Engineer Creek and down back down Engineer Creek and ended in the current position that it's sitting there. Dredge number 9, again, is sort of a mystery one. I never did see dredge 9. Maybe somebody in your audience knows where it happened or where it was working. Dredge number 10, I think most people are familiar with, is the one that started in 1941. In the Cripple Creek area, and dredged that area out, and is still sitting over in Cripple Creek. That's a brief history of 7 dredges that were operating that I know of, 2 of them sort of a mystery boats.
Well, that's really interesting, Don. I've always wondered, I've always seen dredge 8, and I wondered, you know, were there just 8 dredges? And now you've kind of cleared up the mystery about the dredges. We were talking about your employment with the FE company, and that was, of course, following the period of time that you received your Bachelor of Science degree from the School of Mineral Engineering here, is that right?
Yes, that's right. I graduated in 47, and I worked with the FE company, or USS R&M company at that time, until 50, at which time I took a job with what was then the Territorial Department of Mines.
Mm-hmm. And that was in the assay office?
It was in the assay office in Fairbanks. At that time, the territory used to have an assay office in Fairbanks, one in Anchorage, one in Nome, and one in Ketchikan.
Mm-hmm. Did you ever go into the mining game on your own?
No, I never did. Maybe I wasn't adventurous enough, uh-huh. Jim, I don't know, but I never did go out on my own.
Uh-huh. What did you do following the period of time that you worked for the Bureau of Mines, Territorial Bureau of Mines, and FE Company?
Well, after I worked the second stretch with the FE Company in 1957, I went back to Penn State to do graduate work.
Mm-hmm.
And I finished that. In fact, I came back to the university then in 1959. I hadn't quite completed everything except my thesis, and I came back to work at the university in 1959.
And now that was the PhD? You finished
I hadn't quite finished when I came back, but then in 1961 I had finished my thesis and got the PhD from Penn State.
Did you, when you came back to the university, you came back as an instructor or professor?
I came back as an assistant professor at that time.
Mm-hmm. And in mining and engineering?
No, my field was in the field of mineral processing. And so we were started shortly after that, we started a graduate program in mineral preparation engineering or mineral processing. They mean the same thing.
Mm-hmm. And how many years did you teach that, Don?
Oh, gosh, I retired from the university in 1979, but I came back in 1983.
Professors at the university find areas outside Alaska or outside the country even where they go to do extra work and extra studies. Have you done anything like that?
Well, not for study, but I have spent quite a few years off and on in Taiwan at National Cheng Kung University. I went over there first as a visiting professor for a couple of year periods, and then when I was over there, I was asked by their National Science Council if I would like to come back on occasions to do cooperative research through our National Science Foundation, which I have done. And over the years, we have established a cooperative agreement between the University of Alaska Fairbanks here and National Cheng Kung University in Taiwan. So I take a trip back that way once or twice a year.
Well, that's good relations, isn't it?
Yes. And I had the opportunity also to look at the other side of China and have taken a couple trips over to the mainland China.
It's interesting. I recently received the nod from China to present a paper at one of the international gold conferences over there in 1989. Now, I guess I'll have to get with you to know what all the customs are about and how I should act over there.
I don't think. You just act like yourself. I have found them to be very congenial people, no matter whether you're talking about the People's Republic or the Republic of China. The people are friendly and congenial. They may have a little difference as to their mode of operation, but I don't think you have any problems, Jim. Where would you be going? Where was it? Beijing?
Beijing
area. Mm-hmm.
It's Shenyang, isn't it?
Shenyang. Well, that's very close to Beijing, uh-huh. About a half an hour flight from Beijing.
Well, then you've, now this is a more recent activity, this Taiwan exchange of information, is it?
The Taiwan Cooperative Agreement we've had in effect since 1979, but we're also trying to establish a cooperative agreement between schools with a university called Central South University of Technology in Hunan Province in the southern part of China. And this is a university that's financed totally by what is called their National Nonferrous Metallurgy Corporation, which is a major government entity which finances research institutes, universities, and anything to do with nonferrous metallurgy, which would include gold, incidentally.
Mm-hmm. What when you after you came back to the University of Alaska and worked in the labs and began teaching, did you have any other than the Taiwan experience, did you have any other experiences outside the university proper that you
not really that I could expound on, Jim. I was pretty much tied up just with university activities at that time.
At that time, when you started the new program, it was a building process, wasn't it?
You mean the graduate program?
Right.
Yeah, well, the graduate program was the first graduate program that we had in the School of Mineral Engineering. At that time, it was called the College of Earth Sciences and Mineral Industries. It was the first graduate program that we had there. And then now we have actually four graduate programs. If I can expound for just a minute on what we offer there, okay? In petroleum engineering, we have a Bachelor of Science degree in petroleum engineering, and also can go on to a Master of Science degree. In the mining and geological engineering department, we offer a Bachelor of Science degree in mining engineering and a Master of Science degree in mining engineering. A Bachelor of Science degree in Geological Engineering and a Master of Science degree in Geological Engineering, and of course the original graduate program, Master of Science in Mineral Preparation Engineering. And of course I must not forget the program that you're vitally involved in, and that is the Mining Extension Program.
Well, I appreciate that. Don, there was something that I wanted to read here, and maybe you'd like to comment on it after I read it. This was out of the Petroleum Engineering Department. It was a news release by Dr. Russell Osterman, and it says here, each year the Society of Petroleum Engineers, that's SPE, conducts a student paper contest in conjunction with the California Regional Meeting of SPE. In this contest, students from USC, University of California, Berkeley, Stanford, and the University of Alaska Fairbanks make presentations of research work they have done before an audience and a panel of judges. We have participated for several years and have won awards in the past. However, at this year's contest held last week in Los Angeles, we did particularly well. The contest is separated into the PhD, Master of Science, and the Bachelor of Science divisions. Matt McGuire of the University of Alaska Fairbanks won the first place prize in the Bachelor of Science division. Sahil Qadir of the University of Alaska Fairbanks won the first place prize in the Master of Science division. And in addition, Mark Hornbrook of the University of Alaska Fairbanks won the second place prize in the Master of Science division. We are, of course, very proud of the students and are pleased with the statement their performance makes about the quality of our program, especially in the area of research. It is particularly significant that we should shut out schools of the quality of Berkeley, Stanford, and the University of Southern California. And of course, these people were guided by Kaveh
Degani.
Degani.
Kaveh Degani.
Kaveh Degani. And Kaveh, sorry about pronunciation. But would you like to make a comment on that, Don? I really think that's well done.
Definitely I would, Jim. I think it's a feather in the bonnet of not only the faculty of the Department of Petroleum Engineering and its associated research function through Petroleum Development Lab, but also it gives credit to the students themselves. I think when you can compete with the major universities, Stanford, University of California, and come out with a program like that, I think it's a definite indication that their education is good and also that the student quality is top.
Well, I was just impressed by their performance, and of course we just had our awards banquet last week, and there were a lot of awards received by our students across the board.
May I make a comment on that, Jim? It's not only the awards, but I think it's very encouraging to see entities outside of the university willing to give scholarship money, whether it's in the form of endowment or whether it's just a scholarship, and to do it without really any pressing to ask them to do it. Let me give you an example. I got a call about a month ago from Construction Incorporated in Anchorage. I have never heard of the outfit before because it's primarily a construction-oriented, but they do handle machinery, Ingersoll Rand machinery and what have you, which is of interest to the mining community. And Kenneth Gerondale, who is the president, said that he would just like to contribute two $1,000 scholarships. All he said was, you pick them, and we'll give you the money. And so it shows an interest. K&K Recycling here in town is now establishing a $10,000 endowment scholarship, plus a $1,000 to get the scholarship card started in this next academic year. So there's not only interest in our point of view, but there's interest outside the university, which to my feeling indicates that the mining industry is getting out of its bottom trough and starting an upswing, which is very encouraging, not only for the state's economy, but for us as an educational institution.
You know, I'd like to make comment regarding K&K Recycling. Of course, K&K is one of the sponsors of this program. And it's, you know, Bernie is, he took a big chance in initiating this recycling program here in the interior of Alaska. And I think he's done a fine job. And in addition to that, I'd like to add that that he's doing a great service for interior Alaska. And along with that, of course, K&K Recycling is located 8.5 miles on the old Richardson Highway. And at this point in time, he's the leader in recycling in the Pacific Northwest. And, of course, Don, you probably know that Bernie is a former miner. He was mining up there in the Circle District, oh, I don't know, 5-6 years ago, and before he started KMK Recycling. And so he understands the mining community. And so what he'd like to tell people, I think, is that if they have ferrous or non-ferrous metals, he's ready to buy and pay cash on the spot. And if you'd like to come out and visit his place, go out there and visit it, 8.5 mile on the old Richardson Highway. And once again, it's K&K Recycling. And if you have other comments about
Yes,
that?
I would, Jim. I've talked to Bernie about this. When you're talking about recycling, I think he has the proper attitude. He's looking at it as a viewpoint of secondary mining operation. In waste material that industry discards, that people in their own homes discard, there are a lot of metal products, recoverable material that can be reused if you have the right system. And I think K&K Recycling is doing an excellent job. And I go along with Bernie on it to view it as a secondary mining operation.
It's a way to get the metals back into circulation.
That's right.
For sure.
Mm-hmm.
Let me talk just 1 minute about a couple of other sponsors that we have here. Don, we'll be right back.
All right.
Hector's Welding, located at 13 Mile Richardson Highway, has been serving Alaska for 40 years. Their 14,400 square foot shop is capable of handling the most demanding work quickly and efficiently. As many of you know, mining equipment fabrication is their specialty, including sluice boxes, conveyors, feeders, grizzlies, and screening plants. And they also fabricate specialized riffles and punch plates. And of course, they have a portable welding unit for fast on-site repairs. I was just out to Hector's Welding a couple of days ago taking a look at one of the new plants that they're producing out there for one of the interior placer miners, and it's just a fascinating plant. It's perhaps one of the largest trommel sluice plants to be put into the field in the interior of Alaska. And I was just amazed at the size of this thing. It's capable of handling up to 500 cubic yards of gravel per hour. So it's a pretty significant plant. And I'm sure that Ken out there wouldn't mind if those folks that are interested in this, in looking at this plant, went out there at 13 Mile Richardson Highway to Hector's Welding and took a look at it. And in addition to that, the placer miners should also know that Hector's now offers a new service, and that, of course, is flocculants. Hector's is the gel log distributor, and, of course, there's a free test kit out there for all the placer miners. All you have to do is stop out there and pick it up. Remember, it's free. So wherever Alaska's miners are working, Hector's is the first name in gold recovery equipment, and, of course, they're located, as I said before, at 13 Mile Richardson Highway. Or you can give them a call at 488-6432, and if you have a question about that new plant that they're constructing out there, once again, give them a call at 488-6432. Tell them you heard of their ad here on Alaska Gold Trails from Jim Madonna. And one other sponsor that I'd like to talk about, one of my favorites, like all of them, that's Alaskan Prospectors. Alaskan Prospectors is located at 504 College Road. And today, Leah over there at Alaskan Prospectors has crystals and minerals from around the world. What a variety of crystals she does have over there. They're just beautiful. In addition to that, she's got recreational gold mining equipment, pans, sluices, suction dredges, and a variety of other gold concentrating equipment. In addition to that, she has the famous Garrett metal detectors and rock saws and polishers. So if you want to contact Leah over there and ask her about her equipment for small-scale mining, her phone number is 452-7398. That's Alaskan Prospectors at 504 College Road. Their phone number, once again, is 452-7398. And Don, I think we've got a call for you here. Let's see what the caller has. Hello, welcome to Alaska Gold Trails. You're on the air. Do you have a question for Don?
Hi, Jim. This is Ben.
Hi,
Ben. I'm off duty, and I listened to the show when they talk about the two missing dredges. Would the dredge at Gnome Creek be maybe one of the other two?
It's possible. The FE company has another dredge up at Hog River, but that was purchased from Live and Good Placers and Live and Good. It's very possible that the old Gnome Creek dredge might be one of them. I'm not sure.
Yeah, I don't know if you're just counting FE dredges or if
yeah,
it's an independent dredge.
No, I was just counting the FE company dredges.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I knew that was one I knew of, but you didn't list it.
Yeah, well, there were two of them that I'm not quite aware of, and I would sure be interested in finding out where they were. What they call what should have been dredge 1 and 9. Maybe they didn't name them. I don't know.
Okay, I saw I mentioned that because I was thinking that's one of the few that I'd been to that I could think of, and you didn't mention that.
No, I didn't, because I don't think that was an FE company dredge.
Oh, well, that's probably a private dredge.
Yeah, probably.
Okay,
so.
I just thought I'd mention it. Thank you.
Thank you for calling.
Thanks, Ben. Don, I got one more group that I want to talk about a little bit, and that's B&L Pawn Shop at the corner of Gaffney and Cushman, which is the most unpredictable variety store in Fairbanks. And I've said this a lot of times. That's an understatement. It's more like having a giant garage sale in one room. One-stop shopping will get you everything. Just to give you an idea, let me list a few items. Jewelry, clocks, stereos, headphones, guns, scopes, winches, propane bottles, tools, hats, musical instruments, cameras, TVs, radios, typewriters, and the list goes on and on. In fact, you can get anything at B&L Pawn. B&L traditionally has offered tremendous savings, but in addition, if you tell Killer you heard it on KFAR, she'll even sweeten the deal. And if you tell her you heard it from Jim on Alaska Gold Trail, she'll even sweeten it more. If your money is a little tight, they'll be happy to help you out. Bring in anything you feel is of value or use, and the folks at B&L will loan you money to get through to better days. Or if you sell items on consignment, they'll work with you on that, too. So if you're looking for anything from snowshoes to diamond rings, see the folks at B&L Pawn, 605 Gaffney. Jim, Bruce, and Killer will be happy to deal. Killer never says no. They'll sell anything but the chandelier, and only then because it's attached. However, you ask Killer, you just never know. That's B&L Pawn, corner of Gaffney and Cushman, 452-6491. They're open 9 to 7 Monday through Friday, 9 to 5 Saturday, and 12 to 5 on Sunday. And remember, tell Killer you heard it here on Alaska Gold Trails, and she'll sweeten the deal. Donna, looks like we've got another call. Hi, welcome to Alaska Gold Trails. You're on the air.
Hello, Jim. Yes, I'd like to find out, you mentioned they got off the railroad at the old college station. In relation to the university, the way that the university is laid out today, where was that college
if you go down the road that goes from the top of the hill down to the physical plant,
okay.
There's a little hill there, and at the foot of that hill, there used to be a house which was occupied by, I think, Mr. Osborne, who was in charge of the agricultural extension, and right at the foot of that hill there was a little station right on the railroad tracks itself, a little wooden station, and that's where it used to be, but it's no longer there. But the train used to stop at that, and used to call College Station. In fact, they used to have a little shuttle car that went back and forth between College Station and Fairbanks for the convenience of the students sometime going back and forth.
Okay, so now is it where those storage buildings are down at the bottom of the hill there?
Pardon? You know where the power plant is at the university?
Yeah, I sure do. Yeah.
Just a little bit west of that is where the College Station was located.
Oh, okay. Well, thank you very much.
You're quite welcome.
We were talking about your progress in Alaska. You, in 1979, you retired as a professor from the University of Alaska.
Right.
Is that correct?
That's correct, Jim, yeah.
And then you went...
Then I went, 79, I went, no, wait a minute now. Yeah, 79. Then I went back to Cheng Kung University for what was supposed to be a two-year stint as a visiting professor. I stayed there for part of the time, and then I came back, and then I went back again to finish up my term. So it was really a one-year stretch, but I put it into 6 months increments. So it was over a two-year period.
Mm-hmm. Then you became... Tell us how you became, tell us when you became dean of the School of Mineral Engineering.
Came back from Cheng Kung University to be director of the Mineral Industry Research Laboratory. And then I had been there, I think that was 83. And then in 84, there was a changing of the deanship, and the ex-dean left. And then I was asked by Chancellor O'Rourke to take over the deanship, and I have been there ever since.
I see. And tell us, just if you had just a couple of minutes to talk about the school, give us a rundown about the school, where it was and how it's progressing and where you see it's heading.
The school, when I first came there, of course, as I said, the enrollment was quite up, which was a function of the fact that the gold mining industry was very active. If I can just give a little historical thing, viewpoint of how I look at it, Jim. The gold mining industry in Alaska, if you look at it over about an 85-year period, it is a cyclic thing which is influenced by four things. Influenced by the price of the commodity or the changing in price of gold, it's influenced by technology transfers or changing technology that's used in the industry. It's influenced or was influenced by new discoveries. And then the biggest influence, I think, is political events. Let me start from 1900 and give you some rough figures as to the value produced in gold per year. Okay, so 1900 up to about 1914, we had about $25 million. A drastic change or drop back down to about 1918 due to the World War I. A vast increase up till 1941 due to the fact that the price of gold had changed from $20 to $35 and technology was coming into effect with diesel engines and bulldozers and what have you. Another drop drastically right after World War II, in which it bottomed out to about 1946, 47, and then a gradual increase again, which never got off the ground because the price of gold hadn't changed, but costs had gone up. And then a real bottom drop down to the early 70s when there was no activity at all. And then all of a sudden, a real big increase in the price of gold. So we had an excess of $63 million per year in 1960 or 1985. But now, of course, the political event that's in there is the environmental movement, which is affecting it. So there's a gradual increase in ounces produced, probably a greater increase in dollar value due only to the price. And we are, as a school, we're influenced by this. As the industry goes down, our enrollment goes down. As the industry picks up, our enrollment picks up. But I see something in the future that looks brighter because of the interest picking up in the mining industry, and we are getting interest picked up in enrollment too.
That same system, of course, of the political changes and so forth affects all metals.
That's
just
right.
As it does gold, you can kind of follow through.
But it changes some in opposite directions.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, as an example, not cinnabar, but stibnite, antimony. Antimony's a war baby, and if you got a war going on, the price of antimony goes up, where other commodities may go down like gold.
Once again, the time has slipped away, folks. I want to thank today's guest, Don Cook. Thank you very much for joining us today on Alaska Gold Trails.
Thank you, Jim. I've enjoyed being here.
Thanks so much. I also want to thank the listening audience for taking part in the program today. Next week, we're going to have a mystery guest. It's been fun, folks. This is Jim Madonna on Alaska Gold Trails. The big event next week, of course, is that instead of a one-hour show, we'll be expanding to a two-hour Gold Trail show. So get your questions ready. We're expecting a lot of calls from you. And I'd like to talk to you, especially if you've got some ideas regarding frontier history, gold mining, and anything else to deal with the mining industry of the state of Alaska. So give us a call right here on Alaska Gold Trails every Friday at 1 o'clock. And we'll be here, like I said, once again, from 1 until 3 p.m., a two-hour show commencing next Friday. So we'll see you then, and until that time, happy prospecting.